Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, Paul Sinclair, veteran UFO and cryptid investigator from North Yorkshire, England, returns as a guest of the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Paul had been on the show previously to talk about the Flixton werewolf, cryptids, some of his own paranormal experiences, and he had a lot to share with us, but time constraints being what they are, he can only share so much in one show. And so we've decided to bring Paul back because he has a lot of important information. He's been at the spear point of investigating a high density activity area. And Paul will be talking about this. Paul's website is truthproof.webs.com. It's truthproof, the truth that leaves no proof. Truthproof, too, beyond the thinking mind. So without any further ado, Paul Sinclair, welcome back to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Thank you very much, James. It's great to be back and share a bit of information with the listeners. I hope they're going to be interested in what we're going to talk about today. I know that we spoke earlier about the Bempton phenomena, the short documentary, 55-minute long documentary that Christopher Turner put together earlier this year. He came and spent a few days with me in what we will call the affected area. I'm very careful not to disclose the area, not because I need it to myself, but out of respect for the people that are still living there. Yes. And working. And we were quite amazed, James, me and Chris, when the documentary got put together. He did it in 3 days. Just how much response it's had. I think in 9 days, it's had over 100,000 hits. And the similarities to the skinwalk, the things that are happening at Skinwalker cannot be denied, but there's nothing copied at Bempton. I firmly believe there's as much, if not more, happening in this area, and it's not something new. Just because some of the listeners will have never heard of even heard of Bempton, you know, look it up on a map, people. You'll find there's an RAF base there that first came to this location in 1940, and it closed in 1968. It was, well, satellite station till 72, and lots of strange things have occurred around that area. They're in documented Coast Guard reports. They're in lifeboat logs. The unexplained phenomena, James, is not new. It is not unique. It has been occurring. This stretch of coastline that we're talking about between Bridlington, Bempton, Filey, Speeton and Buckton, here in the UK on the East Yorkshire coast, is steeped in mystery. There's missing people, genuinely deep research that I've done onto people that have just vanished without trace in this area. There's reports of big cats, and as you know, James, in the UK, we're not supposed to have any large big cats. The biggest predators that we allegedly have are foxes and badgers, really. But people are sighting these big cats from time to time. I mean, just to stay on the cats, James, what I find interesting is the fact that they're seen for a number of weeks by totally independent witnesses in a concentrated area, and then they just drop off the radar. They're not seen again. But this area keeps throwing them up. It keeps showing these reports of them, going back decades and decades, to the point where armed police in the 1990s and helicopters from RAF Leconfield, I think it was 1994, were up searching for a lioness that was seen at a place called Rudston, which is very close to the affected area. Now, it were never caught. Nothing was ever shot. But I think it gives the listener an idea that something very definite was seen if they're confident enough to send... There was 24 armed marksmen looking for this cat and helicopters from an RAF base searching. So something was real, but where does it go? And that's leading me to these areas of eye strangeness, this exotic science that we're immersed in, James. That I believe that these areas of land, these thin areas, somehow either allow these things to enter our sphere of existence, or somehow they attract another alternative reality. I'm not sure how the process works. I don't know the mechanics of this and what links A to B. I'm in no position to say that. All that I know, and all that I'm sure some of the listeners will know, is that areas like this, areas like what we've got at Bempton, are dotted all around the world, and they seem to be a concentrated paranormal soup of unexplained phenomena. You'll know about these areas, James.
Yes, there are some that we've heard of in certain places. Certainly the undisclosed location of the Skinwalker Ranch. I've read the book. Apparently George Knapp has been talking about it lately. And there are other places like it, these high-density phenomena-type areas. Now, since the documentary has come out, and I'm sure there's going to be more such documentaries about Bempton down the track, have you been approached by locals who have reported similar things to you?
Yeah, most of the information that we've got, although my feet on the ground research, all through from New Year's Day, just about 2018, to present day, I've been in the affected area in between 4:30 and 5:30 on a morning, because I've wanted to find these mutilated animals and get to them as quickly as possible before foxes and badgers could predate on them, or crows. Believe it or not, James, crows are the biggest culprits for distorting the carcass. And we've seen 20 or 30 crows or rooks, you know, on these animals. And you can't tell once everything's had a little peck. I'm sorry for sounding macabre, people. What the condition of the animal was 2 hours earlier. So, I mean, I've jumped the gun a bit there, so the listeners already know where we're heading with this. And I'd like to tell you how we got into this bit of research, if that's possible, James.
Yes, please. Start from the beginning.
Yeah, well, throughout 2017, and bearing in mind, people, that I've been researching this area years and years, but we've got to start somewhere. So throughout 2017, myself, Bob Brown, a guy called Andy Ramsden, we'd been on the cliff tops around Bempton and Speeton trying to film and observe what I've termed the intelligent light forms. These are spheres of light that are appearing over the sea, and they have done for decades. They're in Coast Guard logs going back to the 1940s and 50s. They don't know what they are, obviously. They're just saying call-outs to unexplained lights over the sea, and they have to respond to a call-out. But they're documented. It's a wonderful piece of documented history of an unexplained phenomena, if people wanted to look at these logs and lifeboat and Coast Guard logs. Anyway, let me stop rambling. Sorry about this. So we're trying to film the light forms in this affected area. And whilst we're filming them, most evenings, huge, powerful torches, good sort of camera equipment, well, you know, quite expensive. And there's a set of eyes watching us, usually in the same place, a long distance away. You know, we're talking like a 5-minute walk away across the fields, large eyes, and they're not fox and they're not badger, and we don't know what they are. And Bob Brown's famous saying was, are the eyes on us? Because we didn't know what this animal was, and we still don't. But it will make sense a little bit further down the story. So throughout 2017, we're trying to film these animals. On New Year's Day of 2018, my wife and myself and our little dog, we went to Danes Dyke, which is 3 miles away from the affected area. And we take the vagrant who lives in the dyke some food. He's lived there 11 years. He leads a solitary life, and he just loves living in the woods. And it's not something I could do, but more power to him. But when we arrived, this guy said to us that we'd just missed the police. So naturally, I asked him what the problem was. It was early morning, New Year's Day, frost on the ground, very cold. He said, well, they wanted to know if I'd seen an unusual dog, a very unusual dog, or anything strange. And I said, really? I said, that's strange. I said, so what were the reason? He said, well, they told me that in the weeks previous, 10 sheep had been killed at a farm at Bempton. And they've wanted to establish what's killed the sheep. And I did say to him, I said, did you tell him that you'd seen the big black cat? And he said he didn't. And I think, well, an unusual animal, that's probably what they're hinting at. But however, the cat's not responsible for this. And I think the listeners might realise this further down the story. But that got me thinking, and I'm thinking, there's been nothing in the papers about any dogs killing sheep, any livestock being killed, anything. So I did a little bit of digging, and I located the farm. eventually located the farmer, contacted him and asked him if I could help him research what was killing his livestock. No mention of unexplained phenomena here from me at all. That was last thing on my mind. I was intrigued what were killing his livestock. So I went to meet him, and I was gathering dates, and and it turned out that it weren't 10 sheep. It had been going on all the way through 2017, and the fields were at the back of where we'd been observing or trying to observe the light forms, the field where this animal sat watching us in the darkness. And it's got a specific name, this field, and I can't give it away because people could look on maps and know exactly where the location is, James. But let's just say it's very, very remote. You've got to drive down over a mile of private road to get to the farm. So first thing I did for him, I rang all the livestock auctions in eastern North Yorkshire to inquire whether other farmers had lost livestock in an unusual way. And I found out that 60 miles up the coast at a place called Ravenscar, they'd lost sheep. So briefly describe what's happening to these animals, James. So whatever's killing them is not or does not seem interested in the meat. It's in most instances taking the throat straight out, removing the ears, removing the eyes, and stripping the face of skin. That's not the behaviour, James, and I think you would agree, of any known predator. Now, when we did the Bempton Phenomena documentary, we were criticised for not showing the photographic evidence, which I've got lots and lots of, and I showed it all. Anybody who went to the Hull UFO conference, the Outer Limits conference a few months ago, will know when I did the presentation, I displayed all the images. Media censorship would not allow us to put these graphic images onto the YouTube channel. And that's the truth of it. We have the images. So I just thought I'd throw that one in. So if any listeners out there want to enlighten me and tell me what kind of predator in the UK captures an animal, kills it instantly by removing its throat, it looks like it's just ripped straight out and there's no blood. These sheep, obviously everyone knows that they're a dirty white colour when they're roaming about in the fields. There's main arteries being severed here, James, and there's no blood splats anywhere. And the eyes removed. In most instances, the ears are removed down to the bone. You can see a circular or semicircular mark onto the skull. So that's what was happening. And it wasn't 10 sheep. It was over 30 sheep. And we're counting now, and it's over 50 sheep because it's continued through into 2018. So I asked the farmer, I stood in his kitchen, I said, I need the dates of when these animals were being discovered. Bearing in mind, he didn't discover them the same day or even on the second day, which is unfortunate. That's why I've been going up every morning, James, in between 4:30 and 5:30, because I want to discover these carcasses as it is happening or as close to as it's happening as possible. So he told me that on any given time on this particular field, he's got 300 to 400 sheep, 80 kilo ewes, either with lambs or ready to give birth. He said, and usually loses 4 or 5 a year. He says, and if he doesn't find them in the long grass, foxes and badgers will eventually find them, and all he'll find was bones and a fleece, which makes sense, James, doesn't it? So he said, but he had found that quota quite early in the year. And it was unusual. And then one morning, he said that it was June the 28th, he arrived at the field and he has a corralled area, James. And it has panels that are roughly the width of a sheep and it can hold 6 sheep nose to tail. At one end, there's a gate and a funneled area to let the sheep in. And at the other end, there's an holding area. And he puts a little like bathing trough in this corralled area so the sheep walk through it and it treats their feet for any infections or diseases that they may have. Plus, they can tag the sheep and work on them. He said, it's a hell of a job to get the sheep into this area. He said, it really is. He says, I've 2 dogs, He said, and we struggle. They know, they don't like it. The foot baths, whatever's in the solution, stings the feet. And they're not silly, they know. He said, so he arrived at this area one morning to find 30 sheep crammed in this panelled area designed for six, nose to tail. Upside down, on the sides, on the backs, hanging over the sides. He said, I can see it now and I cannot believe what I were looking at. He said, the sort of visual in my mind, he said, I couldn't believe it. He said, so we unpegged these panels and started removing the sheep and untangling them because they were in a right state. There was four dead, not from mutilation or any animal attack, from heat exhaustion or fear, suffocation. He doesn't know, but there was four dead. He said, but I knew something was wrong. That could never happen. He said, and I just still think about it most every day. This guy, well, being a sheep farmer, it probably does. I don't suppose me and you would, James, or the listeners, but it stuck in his mind. He said, so I started taking note then, and I was coming quite regular. Now, I just needed to stop there because as I was talking to him and he was going through his notes and he told me this and he gave me the date of the 28th of June, I stood with him in his kitchen, and this is the truth, James, and that's why I've no absolute problem saying it, because he might hear this show one day, and if a person such as myself, a researcher such as myself, is massaging the truth to make it look even more exciting, they get caught out. But I had my red notebook with me, and I said to him, I said, let me just go through this, and I'm flipping through the book. Now, where these sheep were found, in close proximity, about a mile away, there's a lane called Cliff Lane, which leads up to the Bempton Nature Reserve and the Bempton Cliffs. That's our route, usually, to go and observe. 28th of June, I had a chap contact me because he'd found a deer in the edgerow of Cliff Lane with a 3-inch hole bored through its side. The same date as when this guy had the sheep. I showed him, we compared it. I didn't go home and write it in afterwards to make this story sound more interesting, James. That's exactly as it happened. Now, he absolutely could not believe it. And I can't say that A is linked to B here, James, but I think there's a strong possibility that whatever was responsible for getting those sheep crammed into that area designed for six sheep, nose to tail, was also responsible for the death of that roe deer. So that set him off on this journey of looking for the sheep, you know, something unusual killing his sheep. Then a few days later, he sort of went early into the field and he found a ewe, an 80-kilo ewe, there with its laid on its side, with its throat torn out and its face stripped. Thought, we'll leave this. Whatever's killed it's going to come back to eat it. And that's exactly what he did. And the next day there was another one done. But that one hadn't been touched. And this was sort of the procedure or the process of things that continued throughout 2017. There was no pattern really, because whatever was killing the animals, we'd call it the unknown something, would probably hit three sheep over 3 days and then nothing for a week, nothing for 2 weeks. And then one sheep, and then nothing. As I said, the total now is over 50. I found one last week, the last one that I found at about 5 a.m. Ears removed, eyes removed. The 9 days before that, I found a roe deer stag with its eyes removed and its front muzzle stripped. In May, jumping back to May 2018, there'd been at a farm called Greenland Farm, just on the outskirts of Bempton, I know that two roe deer were found mutilated with rather strange wounds in their sides. I couldn't get to see them, not because it was me. They had a gamekeeper on this farm, and they just weren't allowing anybody to see these animals. But with that in mind, on the 11th of May, I decided to visit the affected area early doors. I walked the field in a box section, checking that there's no down sheep, because at this time the grass is pretty high. And then I dropped into a small private wood. And as I was walking through the wood, James, doing my own thing, looking. And I've got a deer in my mind. But I know that the Greenlands Farm deers, that's the reason why. Nothing had planted it in my mind. I'd spent an hour in the wood and decided to walk the outskirts of the field. And there's a fallen hawthorn tree, or it's blent over, and it's about 2 foot off the ground, the bough, and there's shoots growing up from the bough. I think everybody can probably picture it. And it's created an umbrella of sorts, a little secluded area underneath the tree. And I looked underneath, and there's a roedeer stag laid on his side with a... And once again, listeners, I have the photographs. Anybody wants to contact me on Facebook, if James wants me to send him some, I will. And he's got a hole the size of a dinner plate in his side. But unusually, not in the soft area, it looks like the ribs have been exploded from the inside out. And that's the best way I can explain it, listeners. He's pristine. This animal is absolutely in wonderful condition. I had my little dog with me, so I tied him up where I could see him. And I did get the feeling I was being watched, if I'm being truthful. So, and I went through this animal very carefully. It's early morning. There's nobody about. I've got lots of time to take pictures and lots of time to inspect this animal. I got a stick and I went through all his fur around his neck on both sides, his legs, everywhere. There was no sign of trauma anywhere on this animal apart from a hole in his side where the rib cage is. Just annihilated his rib cage, but his internal organs looked pristine, less one thing. Half of his liver had been removed. Now, I'm not sure what predator does this. Also, we need to note, no blood. This animal's eyes were shiny and black. He had not been dead long. So, this was the 11th of May. I proceeded to walk back across the fields, and the farmer's waiting for me. As I would get back, and he said, you know, asked me what I'd seen, everything okay. I told him it was, apart from this roedeer stag. I said, the sheep are fine. He said, well, another sheep got done, you know. I said, really? He said, yeah. I said, Wednesday night. And same procedure, face stripped, no meat taken. So that's the situation that we're at. But if we jump back, James, if I may, unless there's any questions you want to ask me.
No, please continue.
Right, if I jump back to, we mentioned Cliff Lane and the roedeer stag. Now, there's a guy who walks Cliff Lane. It's a single track road, listeners, that goes from the tiny village of Bempton to the cliffs, the bird sanctuary. And Bempton Cliffs, Bempton Speeton Cliffs, which are 200 to 400 foot sheer drops to the North Sea. They're not negotiable. You don't climb down these cliffs. They're sheer drops. And that's where we go to observe the light form. So what I'm saying is there's only one reason to go up Cliff Lane, unless you're going for a walk or to look at the seabirds or do what we do and try and film these lights. It's a mile-long single-track road. And this guy on the 15th of June... was walking up Cliff Lane. Is something he's done for about 25 years on and off, depending on what shift he's on, morning or night. And there's crops growing either side of the lane. And midway up the lane, there's a dirt track called Blake Lane. Blake in Bridlington and Bempton terminologies is black. They call it Blake. And, you know, they have some strange words for different things. Just like everywhere in the world, you know, so it's Blake Howe. There's a burial mound on the lane, so it's Blake Howe Lane, which is burial mound. So in the field at the side of the burial mound, excuse me, people, my wife's just brought a cup of tea in. In the field at the side of the burial mound, there's a pea crop growing, and he's been observing it from when it became shoots to when it what it was now at about 18-inch high. And suddenly, overnight, or it weren't there the day before, there's a large triangular patch of earth. It's brown in the pea crop. Well, this guy rang me and told me about it. On the 16th of June, I went up with him at 6:30 a.m. and I got pictures of the pea crop and the triangle, which are... I always think it's great to take pictures, James, because the listeners, obviously, I can't produce a picture here, but if somebody... wants to call me out, I can send the picture. And sure enough, there's this triangular perfect, not perfect, it's probably 16 foot by 12 inch, 12 foot triangle of earth. And I took pictures of it with a Nikon P900. So I got one of the large expanse of the field and one of a close up. The next day I went up with my little dog and I got a soil sample, which I've done nothing with. So that was interesting. It doesn't prove that we've had UFO visitation. I realise that, but it's an interesting observation. Then if we come forward to the 28th of June, we've got that deer that was found with the 3-inch hole in its side, which is another interesting observation, on the same lane. The same day I later found out, which I've already told you, that the farmer found his 30 sheep crammed into the corral. So if we move forward then to the 3rd of July, and this is the same guy who's told me this, and he's not prone to fantasy. I've known this man a lot of years, and I'll be honest with you, in the two books that I've written, he's got two stories in the second book. Now, that's not a man prone to fantasy, because he's walked this area for such a long time. But he's telling me this. He said, approximately 6 a.m. on the 3rd of July, he's walking up the lane, and he looks over to the old RAF base, RAF Bempton, which we discussed previously, that closed in 1968. It's now just a derelict shell. The buildings have got no windows in. The cows use them just to sort of stable in during the winter time. You get the picture. There's a huge underground base there as well, but which is sealed over with concrete beams. It was a Type 1 rotor during the Cold War. RAF Bempton was a radar station. He said, but there's a huge American vehicle up on the base at 6 a.m. in the morning. And there's three men in white overalls, head gear on and everything. Just, they look like they're doing something. He said, like a search, like a CSI type thing. And he said, I did what you told me to do. He said, I got my phone out and I were going to take some pictures. He said, and suddenly all lines went across my phone. And then everything just flipped through the phone very, very quickly, and it had gone. There was nothing left on the phone. He said he turned around and went home. It unnerved him that much. It becomes more interesting, James. On the 9th of July, a lady walking the cliff tops with a dog at Speeton. And they're pretty sheer, these cliffs, and there's little coves which are inaccessible, but they're sort of undulations in the land, and when she's approaching a cove, she claims she saw a small, black, triangular-shaped object flying below the cliffs, and it just, as it sort of went past this cove, she got a glimpse of it from above, which is quite amazing when you consider that most people who report seeing black triangles only see them from below looking up, and she said it just looked like black Teflon. It just looked like Teflon, and she saw it for a few seconds. Now, I thought that was interesting in when we consider that on the 15th of June, we'd got this triangular indentation in the pea crop. So that was interesting. And on the 25th of July, James, a guy in Bempton, still lives there now, called David Hind, gave me a call. And he said, Paul, he said, I've just been driving on the back road between our village and the neighbouring village, Flamborough. It's a 2.5 mile road. It's not a private road or anything, but it's just a little back road. He said, and I think there's something you really ought to go and take a look at. So he explained, and he said that he'd seen this huge military vehicle. So I put a camera in my car and I set off on towards Bempton on this back road. And sure enough, midway, there's this great big Dodge Ram, which a lot of people will be familiar with. Dark blue it was, but on the back of it, it had a big camouflaged container. And on the top of the container, it had something like a satellite dish. I don't know what it was. I were told it was microwave technology, but I've since been informed it wasn't. Lots of people come up with opinions. So behind the trailer, camouflaged over, under a tarpaulin, there were a large generator. How do I know it was a generator? Because there were more of these units in the area and people had seen them afterwards. So where was this unit positioned? very close to Blake Howe Lane, very close to where the triangle in the Peacock was. Inland, if you'd have walked from that truck, you'd have been walking straight to the affected area where the animals were being killed. So I thought that was interesting. That was the 25th of July. I obtained photographs. I did three runs at this road, backwards and forwards, snapping photographs. And it were difficult, if I'm being truthful. I could have done with a passenger. You know, I'm trying to, it was raining. So you're not getting best quality photographs, but we've got clear photographs. I think if any listeners wanted to look up Truth Proof on Facebook or truthproof.webs.com, I've put the photographs on of most of what I'm talking about, to be honest. But I know the American trucks are on there. I'll get to how I knew they were American in a moment. So that was the 25th of July. But that day wasn't over, because later that day, a guy called Bob Brown asked me if I'd like to go onto Bempton Cliffs. He wanted to have a walk close to the old RAF base. And I agreed, and I drove him up there. And late afternoon, early evening, and whilst we were there, I received a phone call, which Bob heard. And the guy said to me, obviously he said, is this Paul Sinclair? He said, I found your name on the internet. You're the guy that's interested in the unusual things and UFOs. I said, yes. He said, well, my daughter, the day before, has seen a UFO at Sledmere, coming on between Sledmere and Garton on the Wolds. So listeners, this where he's describing is about 13 miles as the crow flies from where we were stood on these cliff tops inland. He said she saw a black tubular-shaped object with a red glowing line through the middle. And she said, and a large gold sphere of light lit up low down. And she'd snapped a few pictures with a phone, which he kindly sent me, so I've got those. And he gave an interesting bit of information before he ended the phone call. He said, there's something else as well. He said, on the outskirts of our village at Garton, he said, there's a big American pickup truck parked up with a big green box on the back and a satellite dish on the top. And it's got a big unit, a trailer, and it looks like a generator that's inside it on the back. I thought, wow, we've got one here. As I stand on these cliff tops, there is one probably less than 2 miles away. I know it's about a mile and a half away. So that was interesting. Now, these trucks were also seen at Staxton Wold as well. Now, Staxton Wold, I received a email and pictures from a guy called Stephen Hay, who lives at Staxton Wold, at the end of July. And we've not done it 25th yet, listeners, but I just, now this bit's in my head, I'll say it because it might slip out later. Steve Hay contacted me to tell me that he looked out of his bedroom window. He lives in one of about four cottages at the top of Staxton Wold, and there's nothing else apart from the RAF Staxton Wold base, which as you can see in the distance. Incidentally, RAF Staxton Wold is the oldest operational RAF base in the world that's, you know, still operating. But he said there's a corn growing in the field opposite our property, he says, and there's three circular indents in the corn in the shape of a triangle. He said, Paul, they weren't there the day before. He sent me the pictures. He said, and we've got these American trucks up here. To back up the American trucks, although I've got the story, I've got the photographs, there's a magazine out in the UK, and the November-ish edition of Air Forces Monthly displayed a picture of these because another person, unknown to me, found them interesting and submitted this picture to Air Forces Monthly asking what these trucks were doing up around East Yorkshire and North Yorkshire and what were they? And they deciphered from the number plates that they were from Germany, and the stenciling on the trucks was American. Quite what they were doing, we don't know. I mean, not forced to have been there because of the unusual activity at Bempton. I can't prove that, but I find it highly interesting that we've got all this sort of richness of paranormal activity occurring, and we've got these observational trucks, you know. So the Air Forces Monthly people were of the opinion that they could have been SAM emulators, surface to air missile emulators. But when I did the talk at Hull, the Outer Limits Conference, two guys from the military came to see me. They came to the talk specifically to see me. They didn't want to talk to me via email. They'd made contact, but they wouldn't tell me what they thought these trucks were. But when we met at Hull, they told me that they thought it was something to do with electronic weapons. Once again, people, I'm not in a position to say that's what it was. You'll never find Paul Sinclair saying, I know exactly what's happening here, not unless I do, and I'm still searching for answers like the rest of us. But let's just now, James, if we've time, I don't know whether you're coming up to a break or anything.
No, we got time. Please continue.
Right, if we've time, we'll jump back to 25th of July, and this guy had just rang me up and told me that his daughter had seen the UFO, and he'd also got these military trucks at Garton on the Wolds. Found that intriguing. So Bob had done what he'd got to do. Excuse me, listeners, while I just grab a drink. Bob had done what he'd got to do as regards to see the RAF base and take a few pictures. That's what he was interested in doing. And we had decided to head back down the cliffs. Bearing in mind the sheer drops, these cliffs, 200 to 400 foot. And we're looking out to sea, and you've got a visual reference from where we stand to the horizon of 20 to 22 miles, depending where you are on the cliff. And as I'm looking out to sea, I can see three lights under the sea. Circular lights. Not maybe the lights, not I think there might be a light. I can see three lights, probably a mile out. And I pointed them out to Bob. And if you stood and looked straight out, they were out and to my right. And Bob couldn't see them. He were waiting for a cataract operation. I said, look, Bob, I said, I've got to get some pictures of these lights. I said, I can see them. I know that that's what it is. Large triangular shape under the sea. And I do realise, listeners, that three of anything is going to form the shape of a triangle unless you just do them end to end. So I set off down the cliffs. Bob's a bit older than me, so I said, you just come down when you're ready. And I ran down the cliff path as fast as I could. I wanted to get James so I was absolutely level with these lights so that I was as close as I could get. So I did that. And I snapped pictures, and once again, I've got pictures of these lights under the sea. Bob eventually caught up, and because we were closer this time, not looking out and to the right, he could see them. I also observed, same as me, that there was steam coming off where the lights were, James. So we're amazed by this. This is not a 5-minute sighting. This is probably a 25-minute sighting. We're watching these lights under the sea. Not in darkness. I mean, I think they'd have probably looked more spectacular if had it been dark. So eventually, they just sent to move out to sea. And that was the end of them. And we thought, wow, what a interesting day. I've seen these American trucks parked on the cliff tops. I didn't know they were American listeners at that time. I didn't know till, somebody sent me the information about Air Forces Monthly, and I purchased the magazine. But we'd seen these big Dodge Rams on the cliff tops. We'd had the phone call about the UFO and the Dodge Ram information, and we'd suddenly seen these lights. So you'd think that would be the end of an interesting day for people interested in the unexplained. We decided to head back home, and I turned and Bob turned. If one of us had blinked, we would have missed it. And a rectangle of light lit up on the distant cliffs from the sea, but no projected beam. And I'm not exaggerating, listeners. Bob Brown runs a radio station, James, Beacon of Light. I'm not pushing it, but what I'm saying is ask Bob. He saw these things. It was as big as an Arctic container, a lorry container, and it was bright red, and it just lit up in a blink and switched off. What it was, I don't know. And Bob likes to swear, and there were a load of swear words came out of his mouth, as you can imagine. And it was just sort of one of them jaw-dropping moments. It was, I can't think what kind of energy could have been produced to cover that area in what was still daylight. It was just quite incredible. And all of that was on the 25th of July. The only thing we can't back up is our visual of the rectangle of light. Because, as you know, James, when you're relating UFO accounts, all we're dealing with is witness testimony, and we've just got to hope that the people who are telling us these things are actually talking their truth. And I can assure people that I'm talking mine, but it doesn't mean that anybody is going to believe it or everybody's going to believe it, but wherever possible, I've got the photographic evidence. So that's the 25th of July. On the 27th, I received a phone call from a lady called Susan Prince, who lives in a block of flats at Bridlington. Bridlington's 3 miles away from the affected area. And they're called Ebor Flats. She still lives there, and she's got fabulous views of the Bay of Bridlington with Flamborough Head and Bempton to the left and Hull to the right. She said it's approximately 3 in the morning, 3:30, between those times. She saw what we've been trying to film for years over Flamborough Head, the light forms. Basically, what you've got, James, is a sphere of orange, red or yellow light that will just suddenly appear. It doesn't get projected from the ground or arrive from somewhere else in the sky. It just switches on. And from that, it will punch instantly into a row of 3 or a row of 5 red lights, evenly spaced. They've usually got the width of the light between them, interestingly enough, you know, the size of the light. You can observe them for a few seconds and then they switch off. And then you'll look at a different part of the sky and they've moved. They've probably moved 20 miles because you've got a vast viewing range here. Bearing in mind, when you consider that we've got 20 miles from the cliff top to the horizon. And that these are the light forms. And that's when they start presenting, this is what happens. But as listeners will know, unexplained phenomena does not present to order. So we've no idea when this is going to happen. And as much time as I spend up there, listeners, it's 24 hours in a day and there's 7 days in a week. And I can't be there, all of them. I've got a wife and I've got, you know, my own girls and grandchildren. Like, you know, another part of my life has to suffer for this what I'm involved in at the moment. But she saw the light forms on the 27th. We'd been seeing these eyes throughout the year on the cliff top, which we'd spoke about. And I think they were maybe connected to whatever's been killing the animals, you know, the sheep. So on the 29th of June, light trawlermen reported seeing the orange spheres of light. Now, the trawlermen are an invaluable source of information to me. And I've got very, very close to some of them over the years and won the confidence because they're a close-knit group of people. It's a hard way to make a living, working out at sea in them conditions. And they don't trust people, everybody that comes to speak to them. So it's took years. So when they contact me and tell me that they've seen these lights and they're familiar with what lights should be seen, as in flares, the discharge of flares, meteorites, unusual atmospherics, the one that's thrown about often, they know these are different. So, you know, I mean, we've got this vast array of unexplained phenomena that were presenting and being seen. I spoke to Coast Guard about the lights, just to stay on the lights briefly. We'll come back to Cliff Lane. Because I've looked in lifeboat logs and Coast Guard logs going back decades, and they've got call-outs to these lights, James, where they've had 9-hour call-outs. They've had the helicopters launched searching for boats in distress or aircraft that might potentially have crashed because members of the public, you know, MOPs, are reporting seeing unusual lights off Flamborough and Bempton. Police officers have reported them. The Coast Guard themselves have seen them. And they've got to act on this. They've got to go out and search. And these 9-hour searches, these 5-hour searches are eventually called off because nothing is found. And the 3-page report that initially says what was seen and then the detailed report of what's involved in the search and then the conclusions usually say false alarm with good intent. It's an easy phrase or an easy bit of terminology just to put in on what must have been a very, very expensive exercise searching for potential people in distress, just to say it were a false alarm. It weren't a false alarm enough to launch helicopters into the sky and launch lifeboats, but we missed. I think as researchers and I think as general public at large, we're missing a massive amount of information contained in these old logs because I've looked through them decade after decade and there's not just the odd report to these unexplained lights. There's lots and lots for every year in every decade and people just seem to let it slip past. I think it's because I'm not saying all of them are unexplained either, but quite a lot of them in these reports will be. And I think because we can't get our head around what we're looking at, it becomes painful to even try and consider. And we have to come up with plausible, mundane explanations. Sometimes the newspapers will report that they have these call-outs. And in one report, they'll say things like, unusual atmosphere, suspected unusual atmospherics, or it could have been afterburners, or it could have been meteorites. All in, that's one, that's three explanations to sum up what they thought it could have been the previous week in the newspaper. Because simply, they've no idea. I think we need new terminology and new words to describe what these things could have been. I realise I've just sidetracked a little bit there, James, and I apologise to listeners, for doing that. But, you know, we'd got to the 29th of July and things were, all this information and all this stuff was escalating. And then, as I said, on the New Year's Day, James, I took him some food, the guy who lives at Danes Dyke, and he told me about all these sheep mutilations, and it all sort of gelled, it all tied in. Everything we were talking about was within, if you stuck a pin in a map and did a 2-mile circle, that's where it was happening. There's another added, a strange added phenomena. Now I've got to know the farmers in the area, and they're hearing electronic voices. And that's as much as I can say about them. He's talking about being stood on his decking at the side of a field, a crop, and hearing what sound like walkie-talkies. Yet there's nobody there. Everybody knows that the crop can only grow 2 to 3 foot high. Unless somebody's nestled down in the crop, there's nobody there. In the nearby wood, in the private wood, which is quite close to the farmhouse, probably 100 yards away, he can stand at his back door on a night and he can hear people talking, but there's no lights in the woods and it sounds electronic. It's quite unsettling for him. It's unnerving. I've heard it once early morning in the wood, and I walked into the wood after I'd searched the fields. It was daylight. There's nobody about, and I could hear somebody talking where I'd just been walking. The bracken were very high, and I considered walking across, climbing the barbed wire fence and walking back through the crop. But that's not my style. I won't walk through crops if I can help it. But it did unnerve me, and I walked back the same way. There was nobody there. I didn't imagine the talking. You know, it's very difficult. I mean, only last week I saw an animal I couldn't describe in the wood. And I didn't get pictures of it. I'm really frustrated. I walked into this same section of wood, and I walked very slow, and I sort of stop, observe for a few minutes, and then do the same and observe. And I'd just set up, and I'd got a Sony camcorder, and I'd got the Nikon with me in a bag, and I'm just sort of stood watching, and this animal, and I thought, wow, it's a puma, and it ran across the wood in front of me at about 40 yards away. It hadn't seen me. I'm pretty confident it had not seen me because, you know, when a wild animal usually sees you, it usually stops split second, has a look and then carries on. But it just sauntered across. So I got the camera out and I stood ready. I didn't stand with camera sort of poised, ready to take a picture, but I thought it would have come out of this thicket. And then another one ran across. So I'm thinking, good God, what's this? And then another one ran across. So there was three. But I can't, I've got to be honest, listeners, I can't make my mind up whether they were dogs or cats. I don't know what they were. Very unusual. And three of them. And that's as, I'm sorry for sounding vague. I'd love to say that it were a puma and it were three cubs, but I don't know whether it was. They were as big as Labrador dogs, but I had no idea what they were. Which leads me to other animals killed in that wood. We've found badgers in that particular wood. Everybody familiar with badgers. They've had their heads removed. But what I find interesting is that they're skinned around their waists, if waist's the midsection, and they've left the fur as though these creatures have got little fur trousers on, and the skin's been removed from the top. From the midsection over, and the heads have been removed. I mean, it could be the work of man, All of this could be the work of man, but he's got to be a pretty clever man to be able to catch a roe deer stag in its prime and do what he's doing to these animals. So basically then Christopher Turner, who's the documentary filmmaker, we've been friends for quite a while, asked if he could come up and stay for 2 or 3 days. And that's what he did. And we sat out during the night and we talked about what was happening. And he made the film, The Bempton Phenomena. And anybody can find this on YouTube and sort of gauge your own opinions on what you think to it and what we've been discussing, because most of what I've talked about today will be in that. Now, Chris is coming back, James, in, I don't know, end of this month or beginning of next month. And we're going to do it, say it proper this time. I mean, I think the other ones have been successful, but we were surprised at its success because it wasn't planned. So we're really going to sort of throw a lot at this one. And I've got plenty of witnesses for Christopher to interview. You know, I'd got him some witnesses last time, but it was sort of all last minute and I'd got him 3 witnesses. But I've got some more lined up for him to interview. We've got some thermal imaging cameras to sort out, and some we'll have drone footage. We're going to really throw everything at this one and try and make it as interesting as we possibly can, James. I don't know what you think to basically what I've been telling you about there.
Well, it's given me a lot of things to think about. Now, in America, for example, when we come across a place where there's a high degree of strange phenomena, let's say, sometimes what we do is we find out what the natives, i.e. the Native Americans, have said about the place. For this particular region of the UK, what is the local folklore? What does that have to say about what's going on? Do you see any kind of indication that this may have been going on for centuries?
Good question. The local folklore regarding this particular area, the area, we'll call it the affected area where the animals are being slaughtered, for want of a better word, we haven't got a lot regarding this. But 11 miles inland, there's the other story that I researched, which we talked about last time, the Flixton Werewolf. That's just 11 miles away. Now, where the vagrant lives in Danes Dyke, there's reports of a werewolf-type creature at Danes Dyke. That's just 2 miles away. And it's all on the coast, all along the edge of the coast. I mean, Ravenscar, where I did say that the sheep were also being killed at a farm up there, that's on the edge of the North Sea. It's almost as though whatever's doing this is using the coastline as a route, as a travel route. And then I say this, James, and I find I'm contradicting myself instantly, because there's one element that I missed out in while I was discussing this. I told you that we were unaware of it till New Year's Day, even though it was happening throughout 2017. Something else was being killed throughout 2017 that sort of throws a different slant. It just throws this paranormal into another level, really, because I was told that harbour porpoise, I don't know if you're familiar with them, they're a little dolphin, about 4 foot long.
No, I've never heard of them.
Yeah, well, there's loads of them around our coast, and they're probably all around the world, to be honest with you. They're about 4 foot long. They're just a miniature dolphin, really. They're exactly the same, little mammal. They were being found very close to all this area on the beaches and around Flamborough and around Bempton. Walkers were finding them and fishermen were finding them with huge holes straight through their jaws. Now, I've got the pictures. Once again, I showed the pictures at Hull. I can quite happily send people the pictures. We just couldn't put these images up for the Bempton phenomena. So these little mammals, these 4 foot long dolphins, look pristine. I mean, some of the people that found them thought they were blow up toys on beach. They're not used to seeing them above the waterline on the beach. They look like they've just been placed there, but in pristine condition. The only damage that's done to them is massive trauma to the jaw, under the jaw. Now, I'm familiar with marine mammals that get hit by propellers and things because having well, an ex-son-in-law used to work on, as a trawlerman, and having friends who are trawlermen. And if a seal or a dolphin gets hit by a boat propeller, it'll put a massive wound in it, usually a spiral-type wound, on these animals. These aren't spiral wounds. These are 3-inch circular holes, not unlike what was on the deer. And bearing in mind, most of the trauma on the sheep is to the throat. The throat's just taken out instantly. The faces are skinned. The eyes are removed. Well, with the dolphins, with the harbour porpoise, the trauma is to the jaw, and it's usually a massive hole. They were found at Flamborough. They were found at Bempton. They were found at Sewerby, which is literally just round the corner, when we say a couple of miles from Bempton, because the Flamborough Head sticks out. So Sewerby's at the other side of Flamborough Head, and Bempton's at the opposite side. Well, that's why I say round the corner. So I sort of concluded, unless it's some massive, massive coincidence, that this predator, this unknown something, is land-based, it's airborne, and it's marine capable. So I'm at a loss what it could be, James.
Yes, there's parts of this that remind me of the so-called cattle mutilations back in the day, yeah. And they still go on, also referred to as unexplained animal deaths, UADs. The strangeness of the holes, the lack of the blood, the specificity of the wounds at targeting certain parts of the anatomy, that's so strange, because whatever is killing them, and let's say for the sake of argument that it may very well be that creature or whatever that intelligence was that was observing you, you know, the eyes and the dark and whatnot. But if it was the culprit behind these animal killings, why would it need to kill in such a fashion? We've heard similar things also with the chupacabras, Paul, yeah. Where they would have this proboscis kind of thing that would extend out of their mouth, and then they would stick it into the goat or the dog, and they would drain. There was some kind of, I don't know if it was an enzyme or something, that would liquefy the innards of the animal, and they would just suck out all the bodily fluids and not leave a drop. So something really strange is going on.
Without a doubt. I mean, the deer, the roe deer that I found in May the 11th, I do realize that the reason I've got deer in my mind was because of the ones that have been found at Greenland's farm. But to find one in such a condition, to find a stag so pristine, and you know, if somebody had shot him in the ribs with a shotgun, they'd have annihilated his internal organs. But it was just like looking at one of those pictures by that famous artist. Everything was in place, everything was pristine, but half of his liver had gone. That was the only thing missing. And no bite marks on his neck, nothing on his legs, no scratches. He just looked perfect. And so I just don't know what's at work here. You know, it really is a strange one. And it is quite unnerving, James, when you find yourself on those cliff tops. I mean, I used to spend a lot of time alone up there. I mean, on a morning, my wife hates it because I'm going up most of the time before light. She doesn't like me going. But I'm doing it. I'm wanting to find these animals. If it ends up that I end up being, I don't know, I don't want to disappear, but if something happens, then it happens. It's the position I'm putting myself in. I'm not being forced to do this. But I've just rambled a bit there, James. I apologize.
Well, this is a subject that kind of lends itself to rambling. Now, before the first segment is over, Paul, one question I had was, you know, about the sheep, and I'm trying to wrap my head around the spectacle of finding all these freaked out sheep crammed into such a small place. Either they were put there, or they're in their terror, they just fled to a place which they normally avoid at all cost. Now, where there's sheep dogs. Has there been an issue where sheep dogs have turned up missing or injured or mutilated?
No, he's not lost any of his dogs. It's just been the sheep, and it's only been on this field, only been on this specific patch of land. Now, I was told that 10 sheep had gone at a place called Buckton in a similar manner, which is close proximity. But this particular farmer, and he's got lots of sheep, is only losing them on this particular field. Now, if the sheep are put into the top part of the field near the farmhouse, nothing happens. No animals get killed when they're observing. The police have been involved, James, with they've been there and done some night vigils with night scopes and things, and seen nothing. A farmer in close proximity enjoys wildlife photography, and he's pulled up there and sat there in the night, waited for daylight with a zoom lens, confident that he's going to catch whatever's doing this. And in the morning, where all the sheep are nestled down, there's one amongst them that's been done. Now, these sheep would be up and terrified if anything were killing one of their flock. Yet they're sat amongst it. They're sat where there wasn't one the night before. And when daylight's arrived, there's been one in the middle of the flock that are all sort of laid down relaxing. So how that happens, I don't know. But I was told about that only a few days ago, actually, even though we've been talking about this for what, past year now, just about. But it just came up. Bearing in mind that these farmers are only interested in their livestock and basically making a living, they're not really as interested in the paranormal aspect of these things as what I am. Although I must admit, the farmer's words, not mine. He says it is a phenomenon that is killing his sheep.
Well, yes, because their livelihood is being affected, and it's an ongoing problem, and it's you know, there is.
Well, the other farmers, James, the other farmers in the area did not want him to say a word at first. He said they wanted it all kept quiet. They didn't want nobody to know. I tell you, they're a very, very close knit lot, these people. He said, but I had to. He said, in the end, I had to. He said, it was just costing me too much. He said, yes. I couldn't keep losing the sheep. He said, I had to, you know, for insurance purposes. But what's it, you know, they've had all sorts of theories that a dog's doing it. But it's like he said, when a dog's chasing animals, he says it's very vocal. They get excited and they're barking and they're yapping and they're yelping. And they'll chase the sheep and just grab hold of the sheep wherever they can. The leg, the side, anywhere. And if the sheep's strong enough, it runs away and the dog ends up with a mouthful of wool and skin until it wears the sheep out and kills it. These kills are precise. It's bang, throat out. And whatever happens after that, I don't know the procedure, eyes and ears removed, or eyes and half an ear removed, or one eye removed. And what's interesting, people, it's not just if it's a one eye that's been removed. I've noted, because usually the sheep's on its side, it's not the side that's exposed to the air, meaning I haven't got there too late and some predator's nicked its eye. It's when I've turned the animal over, the eye's gone.
Huh.
Do you see?
Yes.
And another interesting aspect, I like, which with the roe deer that I found, there were a sheep last week and there were a roe deer probably 9 days ago, a roe deer stag. His eyes had been removed, but there was nothing. They've got very, very, they're very black round their eyes. And there's no nibble marks. There's nothing to suggest anything had tugged, scratched or bit around this animal's eye to get it out. It was just a black cavity. It's very strange. You know, and I've found myself now, I go in the morning by myself, because obviously nobody's going to go at crazy o'clock. But I used to go on a night. But I observed something in early 2018 that really sort of put me off going on a night. Trying to film the lights, I'd gone up on my own, took the cameras, set the tripod up, feel quite safe. I'm confident about myself, even though I'm 55 years old. I'm not sort of worn out or anything. It's just, I'm always a pretty confident kind of person. And I'm observing and I'm looking on land, because I already know about these eyes now. We knew about the eyes, but I already knew about the sheep. So that put you on edge a little bit, because you realise that, listeners, we all know that a sheep is not going to put a load of fight up. It's 80 kilos, though. and whatever's doing it is able to dispatch that sheep instantly. So it could dispatch me instantly, I would think. So I forget about the fact that sheep don't really fight back. Whatever's doing it seems to be able to kill its victim in a blink. So that puts you on edge a little bit. So, and I've learned, we'd already got the story of the eyes that we'd observed through 2017. So I'm always sort of aware. And I kept looking on inland between the cliffs and these fields. And there'd be about a quarter of a mile between the edge of the cliffs and where these fields gently rise up to where the livestock is. Suddenly, and I can't explain it, the land, not in front of me, but in the distance, between the field and the cliffs, lit up. Now, I don't mean the air lit up or the land above it. If you could put a light, make a carpet light up, that's probably the best analogy. If you could make your living room carpet light up, that's what happened. And I couldn't, but it just lit up and lit, switched off, and like as though the grass were a carpet. And I just thought, Christ, what? I can't explain that. And I stood there and I'm looking, I'm scratching my head, and a sort of feeling of fear come over me, and I didn't like it. And I took the camera off the tripod, I put it in the bag, folded the tripod up, and I left the area. I don't know what it was. It could have been good, but I didn't like it. So when you've seen something like that, and after the break, we're just about done with Bempton Phenomena, but I'd like to tell you, if you can remind me, because I've that much stuff buzzing in my head about the missing time, not mine.
Yes, yes. I wanted to ask you, but also, if you wouldn't mind, some of the missing person stories as well, because you know we've been talking about animals, and you mentioned that there are missing persons reports.
James, interestingly, all the people that have gone missing have been here. This spot, not this exact spot, but this particular area where this is happening now is where the people have vanished.
Wow. Okay. Well, hold that thought, Paul, because we've got a whole nother segment to go. And thank you for doing this invaluable work. I mean, you're there at the spear point, you're blazing a trail, and you just happen to be at the right place at the right time. And I do believe that destiny had chosen you, Paul, to do this important work. Okay, to our listeners out there, if you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to our website, thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment.